Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting Podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find three separate speaker feeds with over 400 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Jeff M.
I feel like I should be running for office after that introduction. Thank you. Hi, I'm Jeff. I'm a compulsive overeater, 100-pounder. I'm going to pass around pictures. For those of you listening on the podcast, it's not going to be of any help to you. But there's a lot of embarrassing photos here, many of them showing my journey through my disease. And I have a disease. I have a raving, horrible, terrible disease of compulsive overeating. The book tells me that I should qualify so that you'll believe that I actually am a compulsive overeater. I like to say I used to joke that I was fat before I knew what food was, because both my parents were compulsive overeaters, my mother in particular. I was fat before I knew what food was. As the pictures will illustrate, I was chubby as a youngster, not in my mind, but in actuality. And I was fat most of my life, most of my my entire childhood, most of my young adulthood, most of my adulthood. I had periods of brief recovery, as the book will tell you that many people do, but followed always by a still worse relapse. And that was, in fact, my experience. And I come from it naturally. When my family went out to dinner, we would sit down at the restaurant and we would order either a pizza or four hot dogs as an appetizer, and then we'd look at the menu. So this is a true story. Volume was our watchword. We were, and then crap also. Not just a lot of food, but really bad food. And in my disease, I wouldn't go for the fancy, pastries and chocolates. I would go for the stuff that came in plastic wrappers that you could buy at a convenience store. And I would have a route of convenience stores that I would hit on my way home from any given place. And I would escape a lot to eat. And even now in recovery, if I'm at a baseball game or a movie and I need to go to the restroom, I go out and I kind of sneak around. Because, where's the food? Oh, I don't do that anymore. And I don't need to do that anymore. But growing up fat is a hell unto itself. If you haven't experienced it, I congratulate you that you didn't have to go through it. If you have, you don't need me to remind you how terrible it is. But fat is the last socially acceptable prejudice. And I grew up when things were not so politically correct. So the mockery and the making fun and the all of that that went with it was not only condoned by adults, but sometimes led by the adults. I had a 7th grade Spanish teacher who used to call me Cheeks because I had rather large ones. And it was allowed in the class that anyone, this is in 7th grade, so what was I, 12 or 13? Anyone in class could sneak up behind me and make a cheek attack and come and grab me by the cheek and shake it. And that was seen as funny. Now, I've learned in my recovery, and we'll get there in a minute, that he was just doing the best he could to get through teaching 40 unruly people Spanish that didn't want to know it. But he still condoned this behavior, and that is, in fact, unacceptable. And it was not very pleasant for me, I will say that. One last compulsive eating story before I talk about the real stuff. I would do a lot of my compulsive eating in my car. We live in California. We're always in our cars. And so I did a lot of compulsive eating in my car. And one of my binges of choice were these powdered, little miniature powdered donuts that come in a bag. They also come in a sleeve, but that wasn't nearly enough. So I would go buy two bags of these powdered donuts, sugar, the white powder, and I would put them in my car with a Diet Coke. And I would start to eat them. And of course, I was typically wearing black because that's what people who weigh 300... Oh, I should qualify, shouldn't I? My high weight is 335. I've been absent for 4 years and a month, and I have lost 113 or 114 pounds. So when you weigh north of 300 pounds, black is your favorite color, or lack thereof color. Anyway, so I wore a lot of black, and I have this white powder getting all over my black, whatever it was that I was wearing, and it didn't stop me, and I would eat them until I got to the last two or three. And then I would look down at the bag and say, oh my God, I can't eat a whole bag of donuts. So I'd take the last one or two or three donuts and I would fling them out the window like a frisbee. I hope no one was driving behind me on the freeway, because, you know, I can't imagine what the people behind me would think when they would see these donuts go flying out of the car. And then I'd open the second bag. So that's how much I was lying to myself. Because I did eat a whole bag, but then I just start on the second. And by the time I was done, I had literally a lead brick of donut in my stomach, and a good case of acid reflux. But that didn't stop me from stopping at the next 7-Eleven and repeating the process. Which brings me to, you know, to what I think is one of the most important and sometimes overlooked pieces of information in the program, which is the doctor's opinion in the big book, which is on a Roman numeral page, which means no one ever reads it because they go right to page one, because we can't wait, we're compulsive, we need to get the information now. We can't read the Roman numeral stuff, and I didn't, so it was a surprise to me the first time I read it. But when I read the doctor's opinion, it told me that I have an allergy of the body. My allergy isn't that I break out in hives, or isn't that I break into sweats, it's that I want more. I can't eat sugar and many other things, but sugar for the most part, without wanting more. No matter how much I've eaten, if I eat some, I want more. And I also have an obsession of the mind. And an obsession of the mind creates a singular thought, and that is, I have to eat. I have to eat, because I was taught as a child that food was the salve for the soul. And I wasn't taught by words, I was taught by modeling. And my parents modeled that if you felt it bad, you ate food. And so I did. So food being that salve for the soul, my mind said, that's how you fix things. So I have an obsession. I have to eat. 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 And I can't stop it. And soon it becomes a singular thought, to the point where it blocks out all other thoughts. It blocks out that I have sleep apnea, that I weigh north of 300 pounds, that I have to shop at a big man store. And by the way, I shopped at a store in New York. I grew up in New York. It was called the He-Man Shop. And there wasn't a He-Man within 100 miles of this place. And the clothes were awful. They've done a lot better job of making triple and quadruple and quintuple X clothing that actually looks like real people might wear them. In those days, it was just awful. And then to salve my soul from having to shop in the big man store, I'd walk across the street and get a couple pieces of pizza. Now, if that isn't cunning, baffling, powerful illness, I don't know what is. So I have this obsession of the mind, and I have this allergy of the body, and it acts like an electric eye. You ever drive through a garage gate that's starting to close, and as you go in, it pierces that electric eye and it opens up again? Well, it's like it's a mirror and a light. That's all it is. And so that was what my disease was. It was a mirror and a light just reflecting. The light would reflect into the mirror. It would reflect back to the light. And it just became one big cycle. And I could not do anything about it. And I was spiritually not even on the, you know, on the chart. I didn't even think about spirituality. But I was spiritually, morally, financially, personally bankrupt. I weighed well over 300 pounds, and I was a heart attack waiting to happen. And I said, what am I going to do? And I was going to get the gastric bypass surgery. Now, if anyone has gotten any of those, you know, surgeries, more power to you. If it worked for you, God bless you. I'm not saying it's the wrong thing to do. But for me, it didn't see. I was very scared of it because it's irreversible. When they do that, there's no going back. And so I went to the information sessions, and they showed me the amount of food that I could eat, which I could put, you know, in a little 1 ounce cup, more or less. And I realized that if that's all I ate over the course of a day, I would be, you know, I'm not supposed to curse to here, right? I would be blank, blank crazy. I would be absolutely a lunatic just eating this food. But I said, well, you know, I have no other choice. I'm past the last house on the block. I can't do this anymore. So I went to see the the physician for the last step of this process, or at least that I thought was the last step. And he said to me, well, you go see my therapist, you'll tell me you're fine, and then we'll do the surgery. Exactly. Someone had a quizzical look on their face. Tell me you're fine. I want to find out if I'm fine. Am I fine? Can I do this? Because I knew that I was going to be crazy if that's all I had to eat. So I went and found a therapist who I had known from some earlier forays into the program, which were visits that never took. And I looked him up and I said, I want to talk to you about this, and I've got good insurance, I'll come pay you to have a session. He said, no. What do you mean, no? And he said, no, let's go meet and have coffee. And we'll talk as long as you want. I have 3 hours on Wednesday. And I said, wait, you'll do for me for free what you won't take money for. And he said, yeah, exactly. Let's go. So we met. It was just actually right up the street from here. And we talked about it. And he said, look, you're nuts. You're crazy. And you're going to need the program, and you can go get the surgery and find the program, or you can find the program and see if you need the surgery. And so the following Sunday, this was on a Wednesday, the following Sunday, because July 4th was Saturday, and nobody starts on July 4th. And certainly I wasn't, because my father called my mother forever tomorrow, because she's always going to start tomorrow. Always going to start tomorrow. And I inherited that disease. I was always going to start tomorrow. And so I was going to start July 5th, because that seemed like a good day. Now, I've had a lot of other good days that seemed to start, and those days lasted 10 minutes, or 10 hours, or 10 days, or 10 weeks. But I was still going to do that. I now learned that what I want to do, I have to do now, but we'll talk more about that in a minute. Anyway, I went to a meeting. I said, let's try it. So we'll get back to that in a minute, too. The doc said, the doctor's opinion tells me I have this obsession and this allergy, and there's only one thing that can stop it, and that's a higher power. Well, I'm a deli Jew, okay? I can tell you where every deli is. I can tell you the difference between a knish and a bagel, right? But I cannot tell you what Jews think about God. Cannot do it. You could put a gun to my head right now, I still couldn't do it. And I'm not sure I'm interested in knowing at the moment, but I couldn't do it. So I said, a higher power, I was an agnostic because I was hedging my bet. You know, just in case there was a God, I didn't want to piss him off too much. And many of you in this room have heard the story, but I went down to the ocean to contemplate all this because we live close to the ocean. And I'm sitting there on July 8th or whatever it was, 7th, and saying, what am I going to do? And the waves are getting closer, and it's getting cooler because the night is falling. And I said, waves, stop, and let's not get any darker because I don't have a jacket. And the waves kept coming, and it got darker. I said, no. I said, waves, stop, stop. Don't come closer. No more breaking. That's too noisy. And it didn't stop. And I went, wow. Oh, I guess there is something greater than me out there, because I manage the universe, but apparently I couldn't manage the waves. So I had to say, okay, I get it. So the answer has to come from a higher power. Now, when you're that low, everything is a higher power, because I was deflated. But that's a necessary thing. The doctor's opinion also tells me, by the way, that I cannot tell the truth from a lie. And I could not tell the truth from a lie. First of all, I was a really good liar. I was a really good liar. Because if reality wasn't what I wanted it to be, I would just make up what I wanted it to be and pretend that's what it was. It was acting as if in a very unhelpful way. And I lied to myself, like with the donuts. I can't eat a whole bag, so I'll throw three out the window and start the second. Well, I mean, do the math, guys. I mean, it's not hard. And the literature and my what I've learned in this program is that to even start the program, we have to come from a place of complete deflation and surrender. And I was there. I really was there. I mean, I have tried every diet in the book. Atkins, Spillman, OptiFast, which was really awful, protein powder, terrible. Weight Watchers, doctors, I got more doctors than I know what to do with in here. SlimFast, Jenny Craig, Gene Roth, Dr. New York, Fit for Life, Beverly Hills Diet, Dexatrim, my own diet several times, the Zone frozen yogurt diet, that one was fun, the Beverly Hills Diet, Hypnosis, amphetamines. When I was 12 years old, my parents got me amphetamines. Only later, when I was doing drugs recreationally and owned a physician's desk reference, did I find out that what they were feeding me were amphetamines. Grapefruit diet, pineapple diet, not as much fun as the yogurt diet. Nutrisystems, therapists, Herbalife, AIDS, what a terrible name for diet product. People would bribe me, my uncle would bribe me with money to lose weight, $1 a pound, $5 a pound, $10 a pound. Pritikin, Richard Simmons had something, nutritionists, books. I mean, I have more diet books than I could possibly, know what to do with. And none of them worked. And I've seen more quack doctors that, Donald Duck and I have a lot on this. Quacks out there, just crazy people. And I still couldn't stop eating. I was working in an office that had four people in it and six bowls of candy. I was the only one who ate the candy. They had to refill them every day. And I could not stop. And every day I would walk in, I would say, today is going to be the day I'm not going to eat the candy. And sometimes I'd last till 10 o'clock and sometimes till 11, occasionally till noon. But by 2:30, I was in the candy. And once I was in, forget it. Because I can't stop from starting. And I can't stop once I've started. So I am completely deflated. And so Bill Wilson said it best, no words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. And that's where I was. But willingness, and now I have willingness. I have willingness. But willingness without action is fantasy. And fantasy is just another way that I avoid reality. So I've got to do something. I've got to believe that there's a power greater than myself, and I've got to take the steps. And the first step is we were admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Now, the dictionary definition of the word admit is to come to the truth with reluctance. No one wants to admit that they're bodily and mentally different from their fellows. No one. Excuse me, that's me ringing. I didn't listen to Mickey when he said, turn off your cell phone. Sorry. I had to come to that truth with reluctance. No one that I know of ever skips in this room. Oh, great. Oh, yeah, let's change my life and rearrange my entire manner of thinking. It just doesn't happen. You have to be deflated. I also heard someone once say that if you're having trouble with step one, you might want to try flipping it. I am powerless over food, and my life has become unmanageable. Because that was true for me as well. I was completely powerless over food, and my life had become unmanageable. Unemployable, angry, nasty, terrible, a terrible person to be around. Fat, smelly, and sick in many ways. Sounds delightful, doesn't it? You want to hang out with me then, didn't you? Yeah. So my life was unmanageable. I was lying to myself. I just couldn't do anything. So I had to admit that I was powerless over food, and my life has become unmanageable. Powerless over life, and my food has become unmanageable. It works both ways. Came to believe, we've already talked about the fact that I was a Delhi Jew, so I don't have a real spiritual program. But the book tells me I don't need a spiritual program. The book tells me I need to believe that there is a power greater than myself at work in this world. That's all I need to do. That's all I need to start. And I did. And I created a higher power of my own design. Now, when I say that, it sounds like I'm back in that fantasy world. But nobody can, faith is belief without rigorous proof. I want rigorous proof. I want rigorous proof about everything. By trade, I'm a game show producer. You give me a question, I want two verifiable sources, no Wikipedia. I want real sources. I want you to I want to know this is the truth. This is a verifiable fact. But when you have faith, there isn't any verification. I don't know of anyone that can tell me what God is. They can tell me what their God is, but they can't tell me for a fact what God is. So I then have the ability to say, okay, what is God? Now, I call God He, I personify it, but there's no real personality to my God. It's a higher power. It's who does not have a checklist, who is not going to send me to hell, who is not going to punish me for doing anything wrong, because I punish myself better than anybody could ever punish me. So what are you God punishing me for? And we talk about the grace of God, and I have received the grace of God. Grace means the unmerited love. Unmerited. And I was completely unmeritorious when I walked through these doors. I did not deserve your love or God's love, but yet you both gave it to me. So, I can't control almost anything. Your opinion of me being tops among the list, which I always wanted to control. And so, there's something out there that's a power greater than me, and that's all I needed to do. Step three, I can't, can God? That was the question I went. I can't do any of this. Can God? And it's been proven to me in both my study of the program, and I must admit that I'm a I'm an information junkie. I've read a lot of non-program books. I've read pretty much every AA and OA approved program book. I was really searching for the answers. And what is God? How does it work operationally? And I have come to find out. So now, I've admitted I'm powerless. I came to believe that there's a power greater than me. And I've asked God to give control of my will and my life over to this God of my sort of understanding, of the God that I've created. What do I do? There needs to be a practical application of these steps. So I'm at step three, and obviously there's nine more steps. But I think for my journey, the first three steps were what I really needed to make a go of the program. Now what do I do? Okay, and I did all of the other things. I made the Searching of Fearless Moral Inventory because I am a liar and a cheater and a thief. Because reality wasn't good for me, so I made my own reality. If I couldn't afford it, I tried to steal it. Or I tried to talk somebody into getting it for me. If I couldn't, if somebody said something to me that wasn't what I wanted to hear, I would just pretend that I didn't hear it or change, what they said when I talked to the next person. It didn't matter. Okay? So I had literally, pages and pages and pages of resentments and of amends that I needed to make. And I told my sponsor about them. And I have to tell you that at the end of step five, I didn't just go gleefully dancing off into the night because I knew step eight and nine laid ahead and there would be hell to pay. Well, or maybe not. And actually, it wasn't so hellish. Entirely ready to have God remove the defects of character. Well, some of them were fun. And I wasn't sure I wanted to give them up, but I have to. Because if I don't, I will eat again. Because if I behave the way I behave, food will always be the only answer. And if I was so freaking smart, why was I praying to a bag of donuts? Okay? I mean, sometimes being too smart, and I'm not suggesting I'm all that bright, but sometimes being too smart is worse than not being smart enough. Because, we question everything. Humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. That's a tricky one because, I want my defects to be removed because I know what the result of them not being removed are, but I can't do it myself. I've got to ask God to do it. I can't, I cannot lie. I can consciously decide to tell the truth, but I can't take the defect of wanting to lie away. God has to do that for me. So that's a tricky step, and there's a whole semi-program book just on step six and seven, which I've read, and it was very enlightening. Made a list of the people I had harmed, and then became willing to make amends, and then making the amends wasn't as bad as you think, only because I told the truth, and 90% of the people were very good about it. Some weren't. I had to make amends to a very wealthy, very famous person who I had worked with and stolen money from, and he didn't take it very well. But he said and part of the reason he didn't take it very well is because at the time I made the amends, I couldn't afford to pay the whole amount of money back. And he said, so write a check for $10 a month to a particular charity until you pay it off. And I'm happy to tell you that about 3 weeks ago, and this was about 2.5 years ago, about 3 weeks ago, I made the last payment. So, because faith without works is dead. Faith without action is fantasy. I've got to do what I say I'm going to do, or I'm going to eat again. And I'm going to weigh 400 pounds the next time, or 500 pounds, or die before I get there. You know, I heard somewhere that everybody gives up their substance. Every addict gives up their substance. It's just nice to be alive when it happens. And I would care to live on a little bit anyway, as long as God has for me. Anyway, step 10, continue to take personal inventory. I do a 10th step every night. I look at my life, I look at the defects, the resentments, the things I've done that I'm not proud of. And if I've done something wrong, I do make amends to it right away. I make amends for it right away. Prayer and meditation, I'll talk about in a minute. And having had a spiritual awakening is the result of these steps. The result of these steps. Not a result. The result. And the spiritual awakening doesn't say I'm going to be skinny. It doesn't say I'm going to lose weight. It doesn't say I'm going to be happy. It doesn't say I'm going to get what I want. It says I'll have a spiritual awakening. And the importance of the spiritual awakening is that I get to put God between my disease and my actions. And that's all the steps promise me. That really is. So now here I am. I've done the steps. Now what do I do? What's the practical application? I want to talk about sober eating, because about 18 months ago I heard a gentleman speak. He spoke of sober eating. And it occurred to me that, you know, we have a sort of a unique proposition in the addict world, in that we've got to come to terms with our addictive substance. You know, I would guess, and I am by no means an expert on alcoholism or alcoholics or, you know, working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I would guess if you said to an alcoholic that you've got to drink 3 to 5 times a day, that what would start out as a thimble would grow into a shot glass, and then a tumbler, and then a jug, and a bathtub. And that's what we have to face with food, because we say, okay, I'll eat this. But unless we're very, very, very conscious of it, it can grow into all sorts of places. And that's what happened with me. I lost about 100 pounds, and I started to not really watch my portion size. And I gained weight. I gained weight in abstinence. I gained weight not eating, and my abstinence consists of a lot of foods, processed sugar, cake, cookies, candies, ice cream, frozen yogurt, frothy coffee drinks, any sugar-free variety of those. I consider that methadone. But out of pumpkin bread, cornbread, bagels, french fries, honey and other natural sugars, muffins, pretzels, rice, potatoes, pasta, fried foods. I mean, I can keep going. But, you know, I've got a lot of things that I don't eat. And still not eating them, I was able to gain weight. Because I would let my mood vary the size and scope and shape of my meals. Seconds, thirds, as long as it was contained, it seemed to be okay. Until one day I got on the scale and realized I gained 20 pounds in abstinence. And what am I supposed to do at this point? So luckily, I went to a meeting and I heard this gentleman talk about sober eating. And so now I weigh and measure, and I never thought I would be saying these words, I weigh and measure all of my food. Nothing goes into my mouth that isn't accounted for and then emailed to my food sponsor on a daily basis. Nothing goes into my mouth. 8 ounces of protein. Period. No more. You know, I have very, very regimented and specific meals. And I need to do that because that's, you know, otherwise I would be freelancing and I would be lying to myself, because my disease is still back, my disease is still very much a part of me. It's only the infusion of God in my life on a daily basis that keeps me from being diseased. I'm only this far, I'm only an arm's length away from breaking my abstinence, and sometimes not even that. No calorie counting, no point counting. I weigh once a month. And only because I want to make sure I'm not lying to myself. And I take care of the fork, and God takes care of the scale. And I've been losing weight at the rate of about an ounce a month, about a pound a month, for the last few months. And of course, I want it to be more, but I don't get to make that choice. I talk to my food sponsor. I have ceded all food decisions to other people. I don't make the decisions myself. If I need to change what I have said I'm going to eat, I call somebody. If I'm going to eat lunch late and I'm hungry and I want to have my 4 o'clock fruit snack at 1 o'clock so that I can eat lunch at 3, I call somebody. I don't take it into my own hands. If I can't get someone, I don't do it. You know, I hear people talk a lot about red light and green light and yellow light foods. Well, I'm from New York, as I've said, and I've never met a yellow light that I didn't speed up and drive right through. So I don't have yellow light foods. My abstinence is, you know, the gap between what I can eat and what I can't eat is wide and obvious. Okay, it's wide and obvious. There's no equivocation. There's no gray area. There's no nibbling around the edges for me. And there was for 2.5 years. So I'm not saying that, and stuff that works for some people. Some people need a kinder, gentler abstinence. I need a firmer, more rigid abstinence because I will lie to myself and I will overeat, even if I don't want to, even if I'm in this program, even if I have God on my side. If I don't watch it, that will happen. The other part of sober eating is that I have to accept reality. I have to live my life by courtroom honesty. The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Okay, I've got to know the reality. I can't make things up. I can't have expectations of people, because expectations are premeditated resentments. And my serenity is in direct proportion to my expectations. The less expectations I have, the higher my serenity is. I'm a freelance guy in a very difficult business, and I probably interview for jobs a dozen times a year. And on a good year, I'll get 5 or 6 of them. And when I go in for an interview, I do as much research and as much footwork as I can before I go in. I try and know what I'm talking about when I walk in the door, but when I put my hand on the door, I literally stop and I say, okay, God, I've done the footwork, the rest is up to you. Because I can't control the outcome of that meeting. No matter how much I want the job or how much I want to control it, I can't do it. So I put my hand on the door, I say, I've done my footwork, the rest is up to you. If I don't get it, sometimes I'm disappointed, but some days the phone rings the next day, a better job has come along. You know, and it's the same thing with anything else. I talk to people about romantic relationships. This girl said no, or this guy said no. Well, maybe they said no and it saved you a lot of trouble. Or maybe they said no because something better is going to come along tomorrow. No one knows. We can't play God. We can't predict. I should never say, I'm out of the should business. I don't tell people what they should and shouldn't do. I can tell you what I have done, and I have to stop playing God. Because I can't predict. I don't know what will happen a minute from now or 10 minutes from now. Now is the only time I have. And so when I talk about forever tomorrow, I don't live in forever tomorrow anymore. I live in just for today. Just for this moment. This is the only moment I have. If I'm going to do it, I have to do it now. If I don't do it now, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it in 10 minutes. I either do it now or it doesn't get done. I do have a prayer and meditation. Meditation is hard for me because I have a very active mind, and it bounces around. So when I close my eyes and try and concentrate on anything, it's very difficult for me to, my mind is like an electric ping pong, a metal ping pong ball in an electrical storm. I mean, it just bounces all over the place. But I heard in a meeting very recently that when your mind drifts, the whole idea of meditation is to bring your mind back. So maybe I'm not doing it so wrong. So I bring my mind back. I do what I call a RAD, A-E-I-O-U, every night. I look at my resentments, any amends I need to make, what defects have come up in my day, what I've eaten, if I've exercised, what I've done for myself, what I've done for others, what I've uncovered every night. Now, I would love to tell you that I do all 8 letters every night until it's done, but sometimes I fall asleep, and that's okay. Because the intention is there every night. And every morning I wake up and I read 4 today. I read the little white meditation book. I read On Awakening from the Big Book or another prayer like it, the 11-step prayer and the Serenity Prayer before I start my day. And then I email my sponsor my food from the day before. So I do have a spiritual practice now. And what that has done is it has placed me Thank you. Thank you guys, and thank God it has placed me in a position of neutrality. That's what the book promises. I don't run from food. No one can get away from birthday cakes. No one can get away from the nice, well-intentioned person making zucchini bread and shoving it in your face at work. No one can get away from that sort of stuff. So I don't have to, because I just say no thank you. And if they say, why don't you? I say, I'm allergic to sugar. And if they ask again, I tell them I'm in a 12-step program. And I can't eat it. And if they ask another time, I say, stop. I've answered you three times. I really appreciate what you're doing, but I can't have it. So let's not go there. And it's okay. I'm very nice the first three times. The fourth time, maybe needs a little work. But I am placed in a position of neutrality, and I'm very blessed. I've been blessed with lovely people to walk the road with, and a good, clean abstinence, a group of men who are very supportive of me in my sober eating issues, and a group of everyone in this room and every room I walk into who would do anything to support my recovery. Think about that, because I would do anything to support your recovery. Okay, I would stop what I was doing and take your call. I would come to your house and hold your hand. I would do anything I could to support your recovery. And if you're new, a newcomer walks in the room, I'll do anything I can to try and explain what the program as I understand it. And that's what I get back from everybody. The last thing I want to talk about is service, because I have to get out of my head. Because my head, as we've discussed, it's a very busy place. And the way that I do that is by giving back, is by trying to be of service at meetings, regional level and on the intergroup level, and one-on-one. I just try and give back as much as I can. There are times when I say, geez, I'm in the middle of something, can I call you back? And occasionally I do. But I try my best to give of myself and not to think only of myself. And all of these things have combined into making me, in my view, a much happier, more serene, easier to get along with person who can now buy clothes at a regular department store. I have lost 16 inches off my waist. But I said when I first started, my goal was to buy pants at Costco. Not that Costco has such great pants, but it meant that I was one among many, as opposed to one outside of many. And that's really what the program has given me. I no longer have to be special. I no longer have to run the show. I no longer have to be the center of attention. I can be, I can be who I am. I can be honest and truthful, and I can try and be as loving as I can. And it works if you work it. And I thank you for spending the time with me. Thank you.